All right, if you want to get your Bibles, and if you have not already, turn to the book of Daniel in the Old Testament. We began this study last week with an introduction to the book, just to kind of put it in its context, in its historical context, so that we know what we're studying when we get over to this book. It is a 12-chapter book, but it is just chock full of great material that has a lot of application to our New Testament study as well. And so we want to spend some time getting through these chapters. We've got 10 classes and 12 chapters, so we'll do a little bit of combining as we go through this. I'll be out of town next week, and so I appreciate Richard. He'll be teaching chapter 3 next week, so we have to get through chapter 2 this week so that we can be ready for that chapter next week. But you get into the book of Daniel, and right at the very beginning of the book, you are told when this is transpiring. Chapter 1 and verse 1 tells us it's the third year of Jehoiakim, who's the king of Judah. And Jehoiakim was put on the throne there in Judah by Pharaoh Necho from Egypt. And after Babylon had conquered Assyria and Egypt in 606, now it becomes a part of the Babylonian Empire. And so when you get to the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 1, it's 606 B.C. If you want to put a time marker there, some people have it down as 605 B.C. But 606, 605 B.C. Is your time frame. And this book of Daniel covers more than 70 years. You remember the book of Jeremiah in Jeremiah chapter 25. You have Jeremiah telling the children of Israel that they're going to be in captivity for 70 years. And so Daniel is there for that entire period. He's taken at the beginning of it. He lives all the way through that entire 70-year captivity in Babylon and even several years into the Persian period as well. So that's our time frame when we get into the book of Daniel. And Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, which are their Babylonian names, we know them better by their Babylonian names than we do their Hebrew names, they are four of the ones who are taken over into Babylon during that first wave of captives. Look in chapter 1 and verse 4. We looked in the first seven verses last week. We're going to very quickly look at this first chapter today so that we can spend most of our time in chapter 2. But when you get into chapter 1, verses 3 and 4, tell us that it was among the king's descendants or the royal family that were some of those that were taken first, some of the nobles, and that's Daniel and his three friends were some of the nobles. They're among the tribe of Judah. They are royalty, and they are taken specifically because verse 4 says they're young men who have good health, they are good looking, they have a good appearance, they are gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, they're quick to understand. These are individuals that the king is going to have trained. Down in verse 5 says they're going to spend 3 years of training in getting these men ready to serve in the king's palace. They are going to have a position of authority, as it were, even in the king's palace. But they've got to be trained, as verse 4 says, in their language, in their literature, trained to become Babylonians. So we saw in verses 6 and 7 last week that they were given new names. If you're going to help someone to become adapted to their new culture, then you one of the things you can do is to change their name so that everybody, every time somebody calls their name, they're not hearing. Verse 6 has their Jewish names, the names that they were given by their parents, and all four of those names are tied to God, are tied to Jehovah. Buzz, I don't have control of the PowerPoint, so if you could flip that over. In verse 6, their names originally were names that were tied to Jehovah. So the end of their names, Daniel, E-L on the end of his name is God. Mishael, E-L on the end is God. Azariah, Hananiah has Jehovah on the end of those names. And so they're all tied to God or Jehovah in their names. In verse 7, they're all given new names. They're given Babylonian names. And those names are tied, as you would expect, to many of the Babylonian gods. So that when they hear their names now in their new land, it's supposed to kind of brainwash them into thinking that they're a part of this new land. They're trained in this new land. They're taught the religion of this new land. You need to adapt and you need to become a Babylonian. What's the first word you have in verse 8? But. We're training you to become a Babylonian. We're giving you a new name. You are a Babylonian. You need to adapt to your culture. First word of verse 8. But if verse 8 wasn't true, if what's told to us in verse 8 was not true, if verse 8 was not here in the text, we would not have the book of Daniel. We might have the book of Daniel by some other name, with some other character, but if verse 8 was not in your Bible, we would not know who Daniel was. Why? Because Daniel comes to this new culture, this new land. He's being brainwashed, as it were. But it says in verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. Is that a good lesson for us today? Trying to be brainwashed into a culture today, to think a certain way, to do a certain thing that is contrary to the will of God. And the Bible says Daniel was not going to do that. He was not going to allow himself to be defiled with the portion of the king's delicacies or the wine which he drank. There was something about that training that was against the law of God, and Daniel was not going to do it. And so he requested that he might not have to defile himself, is what verse 8 tells us. And so he was given permission to do that. And so he said, put us to the test. You know this story as you go through this. He says, put us to the test. Put us on a 10-day test. Give us a different diet than what you're feeding all of these other young men. And if after 10 days, if we're not better off than those other guys after 10 days, then don't worry about it. Well, after 10 days, verse 15 says, they appeared better than everybody else. Of course, everybody wants to go in here and look at the diet that they were on to prove that. I don't think it has anything to do with what they were eating. I think it has everything to do with God. When you read the book of Daniel, it's not about the people. You read the book of Daniel, it's about God. You read, and so this isn't about the people. It's about their devotion to God. Verse 17 says, as for these four young men, God gave them. Do you see God in control? You're going to see this all throughout the book, but especially in these chapters we look at today. God gave them knowledge and skill. Remember what verse verse 4 said, that they were looking for men that they could teach, the end of it, the language and literature. Verse 5 says they were going to go under 3 years of training. Well, guess what verse 17 tells us? God is the one who taught them. God is the one who gave them knowledge and skill in all the literature and wisdom. And the end of verse 17 is key. Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. We're going to see that in chapter 2 today, that God gave Daniel. It wasn't Daniel's ability. It was God giving Daniel the ability to understand all visions and dreams. Verse 18, at the end of the days, that's at the not at the end of the 10 days, that was already over. This is at the end of the 3 years of training. Verse 18, at the end of the 3 years of training, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And I want you to see the superlatives that are in verses 19 and 20. Then the king interviewed Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He talked with them. And among them all, among all of the captives that had been brought in from all of these other nations and from Judah too, among them all, none was like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, called by their Jewish names because that's what was most important. Therefore, they served before the king. They were given a position of authority there in his court, verse 20, and in all matters. There was none like them among all of the people, verse 19, in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better. Not that he was putting them on a scale, but 10 times better is just a figurative way of saying they were superior in every respect to everyone else. So they, in all matters, it says, they were 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers. Here's the wise men. We're going to see them in chapter 2. They are 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all of Nebuchadnezzar's realm. 4 times in verses 19 and 20, you've got the word all, or in your Bible, you might have the word every on one or two of those. What does that tell you about God's people? What does that tell you about God blessing His people? When God blesses His people, they are superior to everyone else. Doesn't mean they look better. Doesn't mean they act smarter. It means that when you're blessed by God, you are blessed by God. And when he does that, you can do many things for his cause, and that's what God is doing. He is using these men. He's not just giving them abilities. He is using them for a very specific purpose to help preserve his people while they are in Babylonian captivity. So verse 21 says, "Thus Daniel continued." Remember, he's taken in 606, and he continues until the first year of King Cyrus. King Cyrus is the king of Persia. And so what he's telling us at the end of this chapter is Daniel lived all the way through the Babylonian captivity. Daniel gets probably close to 90, if not to at least 90 years of age by the time you're at the end of the book of Daniel. We mentioned this last week in Daniel chapter 6, when Daniel is in the lion's den, he is at least in his mid-80s. He's not a young guy. Pardon me if you're in your mid-80s and you don't, and I say that. But he's not a young guy when he's in the lion's den. That's the point of this, is to let us know Daniel is there the entirety of that time. And so in chapter 1, we have the trial of faith, the choice of faith. They're not going to defile themselves, and you see the reward of faith. You get into chapter 2. Chapter 1, I spent a little bit more time there than I should have, because chapter 2, I mentioned last week, is the most important chapter in the book of Daniel. And I mentioned last week, it's not only the most important chapter in the book of Daniel, it is in at least the top five most important chapters in the Old Testament. This is a key chapter in God's revelation to us and helping us to see God bringing about His plan that He had from all of eternity. So I want us to get into chapter 2 and try to understand as much as we can here about Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and that's what this is all about. He's going to have another dream when we get into chapter 4. But in chapter 2, he has this great dream of an image that he saw. And I want you to see the timestamp. Daniel is good about timestamps in verse 1. He says it's in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. In the way that they counted time, it's likely talking about this is after the 3 years of training. And now Daniel and his friends are in positions of authority. Verse 1 says, "Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him." And so we've got the king having dreams, maybe the same dream over and over. It may not be separate. It may just be the same dream over and over that he's having. And he's troubled by it so that he can't sleep. And so he gave a command in verse 2 to call his intelligentsia. He is calling together the wisest men, which is what they're going to be called in verse 12. He calls together his intelligentsia of Babylon and says, "Look, guys, I need you to help me." And so he calls them together, the magicians, astrologers, sorcerers, Chaldeans. Chaldeans were just the master astrologers, so that they could tell the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king, and the king said to them, "I have had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream." Nebuchadnezzar is troubled. He wants to understand his dream. He wants to understand what it means. So verse 4 says, the Chaldeans, again, these are the master astrologers. These are the ones that were very trusted in that day. They spoke to the king in Aramaic. We mentioned last week that from this point in the book of Daniel, from the end of chapter 2 and verse 4, all the way through the end of chapter 7, so that the very heart of the book of Daniel, from chapter 2, verse 4, through chapter 7, verse 28, is written in Aramaic. We don't see that in the English. Most of the Old Testament was written in what language? Hebrew. Most of the Old Testament is written in Hebrew. There are very small sections that were written in Aramaic. This is the largest of those small sections, written in Aramaic, which was just an international language of that time, spoken especially in Babylon, which would make sense that the heart of this book that's written in Babylonian captivity is written in Aramaic, the language that would have been understood especially by the Babylonians and the Persians at that time. And so that's the king. The Chaldeans spoke to the king, and they say in verse 4, "O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will give you their interpretation." What was the king asking them to do? "Tell me my dream." And they said, "Okay, king, you tell us the dream, and we'll tell you the interpretation." Why did they want the king to tell them the dream? Well, because they couldn't tell him the dream. But if he would tell them the dream, then they could go to their manuals and look up whatever he was dreaming. You know, if you're dreaming about people, if you're dreaming about animals, if you're dreaming about sun, moon, and stars, whatever it is, they could go to their manuals and look up the code, you know, then use their secret decoder ring, say, oh, this is what that means. So you just tell us the dream and we'll figure out what the interpretation is. Well, that's what they wanted, right? And I want you to see how the providence of God is at work all throughout this chapter. Could they tell the king his dream? Of course not. Is that going to come into play later in the chapter? Is that important? Yes, very important. So verse 5 says, the king answered and said to these wise men, to the Chaldeans, guys, my decision is firm. If you do not make known, and that expression make known is going to be found, I didn't count it, but at least six or seven, at least half a dozen times in this chapter. If you do not make known the dream to me, what's the word after that? And its interpretation. I want you to tell me the dream and the interpretation. Do you really have this ability, which you've been claiming to have, or are you guys just charlatans? I want you to tell me the dream and its interpretation. And if you don't, you shall be cut in pieces and your house shall be made an ash heap. That's all. Don't worry about it. If you can't tell me the dream, you're just going to be cut limb from limb. Literally, the Hebrew meant you're going to be made into limbs. You're just going to be cut limb from limb in order and your house be made an ash heap, which was sort of a, you read that here, it's kind of a common expression. And it's kind of a common statement that was made back then. Next week, at the end of chapter 3, Richard's going to see the very same thing. That was said about if anyone speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, in chapter 3 and verse 29, he's going to say the same thing, Nebuchadnezzar is, that if anybody speaks against him, they're going to be cut into pieces and their houses made an ash heap. So he's laying down the law. My decision is firm. Verse 6, however, if you tell me the dream, next word, and its interpretation, I want you to tell me both, guys. You shall receive from me gifts, rewards, you're going to get some material benefits, and great honor. Therefore, tell me the dream, next word, and its interpretation. Guys, you've got to tell me both, and when you do, you will receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. I don't want to steal the show in case you don't know this, but go over to verse 48. Here's what the king promised he would do if they would tell him the dream and its interpretation. Gifts, rewards, material possessions, and great honor. Well, what happened in verse 48? The king promoted Daniel. Gave him what? Many great gifts. And what else? Made him ruler. So he was given those material possessions and he was promoted and given a position of honor. So the king was true to his word, did it even for Daniel. So come back to verse 7. They answered, my Bible says, again. Maybe you didn't understand, king. Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will give its interpretation. So the king has first gone to his resources, and his resources are letting him down. And so now he becomes suspicious of these guys. King answered in verse 8, I know for certain. New King James says, I know for certain that you would gain time. Other translations are a little bit better, saying, you're bargaining for time. You're just trying to save your hide. You're trying to buy time. You're trying to delay the inevitable. You're trying to bargain for time. You're trying to buy some time because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known, there's that expression. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is only one decree for you. Remember, you're going to be chopped up into pieces and your house is made an ash heap. For you have agreed. You've come in here, but apparently you've agreed amongst yourselves to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time has changed. You've come in here and you've already predetermined that when you come in here, you're just going to tell me what I want to hear. You're going to make promises that you can't keep, just hoping the situation might change. Therefore, guys, tell me the dream. You've made claims before that you can do this. Tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretation. So here's the wise men again. The Chaldeans, these great master astrologers. They answered the king and said, and I want you to see how they are, they don't know it. They are setting this up. They are setting this up for Daniel. They are setting this up for God. And again, I want you to see the providence of God even in their answers. They give four defenses. They give four reasons that they can't do it. But the four reasons they can't do it, well, how could Daniel do it then? How could anybody do it? Look at what they say. Number one, they say, there is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter. Is that true? Well, yes, actually it is true. There is no man that can do it. Somebody says, well, Daniel did it. Daniel was just the mouthpiece. There's no man on earth who can, only God, in other words, they're saying only God can do it. And guess what? They're right. That's true. Number two, they say, therefore no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. They're going back to historical precedents. And they're saying, king, we want you to understand, nobody in your position has ever asked anything like this. It is unreasonable. Number three in verse 11, it's a difficult thing that the king requests. How can you expect us to discover something that is only in your mind? Number four, there is no other who can tell it to the king except, what do they admit? Only the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. Or in other words, whose dwelling is not with us. The gods aren't helping us out, king. Only the gods can know this. And so they admit that they lacked connection with any kind of deity, which is basically proving them to be phony and proving them to be liars. And they have to admit what they just admitted, but don't run over those verses. It is them setting up the rest of the chapter to prove this isn't from man. This can only be from God. And so what's the king's reaction in verse 12? Angry, very furious. He gave the command, exactly what he said was going to happen. He gave the command to destroy all the wise men. Guys, you're done. The men he had called before him in verse 2, the magicians, astrologers, sorcerers, the Chaldeans, you're done. He gave the command to destroy him. And so the decree went out. And the New King James says, and they began killing the wise men. Maybe better translated, that the decree went out that they should be killed. And they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Well, why did they seek Daniel and his friends to kill them? Because they're among the wise men. They have finished that 3 years of training. Remember what the king did? The king was so impressed with them at the end of chapter 1 that they were better than all of the others, all of the other magicians and astrologers. And so Daniel and his companions are among the wise men in Babylon. They're not just some slaves. They are serving in the king's court. And so they are among the ones who are to be put to death. And so there we see the first 13 verses, Nebuchadnezzar's search for answers and his concern about his dream and how he finally says, you know what, if you can't tell me what I want to know, you're dead. And so we get to verse 14 and we see Daniel intervening from verse 14 down to verse 23. And we see how Daniel begins to request some time. Verse 14, then with counsel and wisdom. What? These are two good words here. With counsel and wisdom. Or what do you have? Discretion and discernment. I want you to think, Daniel is 17, 18, 19 years old right here. He's not some old man. He's taken into captivity in the last chapter. He's 14, 15, or 16. This is 3 years later. How old is he? He's 17, 18, or 19 years old. All right? He is a young man. Verse 14 says, he works with counsel and wisdom. He works with discretion and discernment. And he answered Arioch, who is the captain of the king's guard. He's basically the chief executioner. If you want to know who he is, he's the guy responsible for carrying out the king's command to go and kill the wise men. Captain of the king's guard, he's out there ready to execute all of the wise men in a very calm demeanor. You think Daniel knows who's in charge here? Ready to do what the Lord would have him to do. He answers Arioch, captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men. Verse 15, he answered and said to Arioch, king's captain, why is the decree from the king so, New King James says, so urgent? Why is it so severe? Why is it so cruel? And Arioch, why does the king want to kill all the wise men? And so Arioch told Daniel what was going on in verse 15. Verse 16, Daniel asked for an audience with the king. He couldn't just go in there himself. And what we'll see when we get to verse 24 and 25 is that he had to go through Arioch, kind of using him as to intervene. And once Daniel hears what's supposed to happen to the wise men and why the wise men are supposed to be killed, he wants an audience with the king in order that he might tell him the interpretation. But before he goes before the king, what does he do? This reminds me of Nehemiah. When you read throughout the book of Nehemiah, and you remember Nehemiah is the cupbearer for the king, and he hears about what's going on. Nehemiah is a couple hundred years after Daniel, but he's the cupbearer for the king, and when he hears that Jerusalem still lies in ruins, the king says to Nehemiah, "Why is your face so sad?" Well, you know Nehemiah wanted to ask the king to go back home and build the walls, but before he could say anything to the king, you know what Nehemiah did in Nehemiah chapter 1, about verse 8 or so? He prayed to God. I'm going to go talk to God before I answer your question. Here's Daniel. Before he goes to talk to the king, what does he do? He seeks not intervention from Arioch with the king. He first seeks intervention from his God. Daniel went to his house, verse 17, made the decision known to his three Hebrew friends, called by their Hebrew names. Verse 18, why did he tell them that? That they might seek mercies from some god? One of the gods? Some man? No. We're going to seek mercies. We're going to talk to the God of heaven. Key expression in this book. We're not talking to some god. We're going to talk to the God of heaven concerning this secret so that Daniel's companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men. Verse 19, after they had sought God's wisdom on this, verse 19, the secret was revealed to Daniel. God revealed the secret. Remember what chapter 1 verse 17 said, Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. God reveals this to him in chapter 2 and verse 19, revealed to Daniel in a night vision. And as soon as Daniel understood Nebuchadnezzar's dream, what did he do? He blessed what God? Some God? A God? No. He blessed the God of heaven. And so he answered and said, and from verse 20 through down through verse 23 is his prayer of praise to God. Blessed, praise be to the name of God forever and ever. He's eternal. For wisdom and might are his. God is omniscient. God is omnipotent. Wisdom and might are his. Verse 21 is key. And he changes, Jehovah changes the times and the seasons. You see the providential orchestration of history here. He changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. That is a key theme throughout this book. God is in control of the kingdoms of men. He removes kings. He raises kings. He rules over the nations. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things, which is what he just did to Daniel. How could Daniel know what somebody else dreamed unless God told him? He knows what's in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers, that you have given me, the very thing he said in verse 20, you have given me wisdom and might and have now made known, there's that expression, made known to me what we asked of you. What we asked you, you've taught me, for you have made known to us the king's demand. Daniel gets the message from the Lord. Lord reveals to him what Nebuchadnezzar had dreamed and reveals the interpretation. And so now it's time for Daniel to go and appear before the king in verse 24. And so he seeks Arioch's intervention. The one who had been appointed to destroy the wise men is now the one that Daniel goes and says to him in verse 24, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king and I will tell the king the interpretation." Daniel's confident that God is going to take care of him. So Arioch, verse 25, quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to the king. What's the first word that Arioch says to the king? It's a little word. I. In my Bible, it's the word I. It's maybe possible that Arioch wants some credit here. I have found a man. It's about me here. I found a man among the captives of Judah who will make known, there's that expression, to the king the interpretation. I want you to imagine what Nebuchadnezzar's thinking right now. None of my wise men could tell me anything, and now this guy from Judah is coming to tell me the interpretation? So the king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, put that in there to remind us and to remind Daniel, I'm sure that's what the king called him, you're a Babylonian boy, are you able to make known, there's that expression, are you able to make known the dream which I have seen and its interpretation? Son, are you able to do both of these things? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers, they cannot declare to the king. What had the wise men said to the king? We can't tell you this. What did Daniel say? They're right. They can't tell you that. So the king says, can you tell me this? And Daniel says, your wise men can't tell you that. What's the first word you've got in verse 28? But. Your wise men, they can't tell you. But. Does Daniel go on to say, but I can tell you? Nope, this is not about Daniel. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets and has made known. There's that expression. He's made known. But I want you to see what this says. He is made known not to me. He is made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Nebuchadnezzar, I'm here to tell you what your dream is, interpretation. But what I want you to understand is that God has revealed, not to me, He's revealed to you what's going to happen in the latter days. He's revealed to you an unfolding of history. He's revealed to you His plan to establish His kingdom. That's the whole point of Daniel chapter 2. It's not about man's kingdoms. It's all about God's kingdom that's going to be established. And Daniel says he's made known to you his plan, essentially, to put his kingdom here in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. And so he begins to say in verse 29, as for you, O king, thoughts came into your mind while you were on your bed and about what came to pass after this. And he who reveals secrets has made known. To who? Not to Daniel. He's made known to Nebuchadnezzar what will be. But Nebuchadnezzar didn't understand it. But Daniel's telling him, God has shown you something that is special to God. Verse 30. But as for me, he's made known this to you, Nebuchadnezzar. But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living. Think about the humility of Daniel. 17, 18, 19-year-old kid. I'm not here because I'm better than anybody else. I'm not here because I have more wisdom than anybody else. This has been made known to me so that I can make known the interpretation to the king. That's the only reason I know this, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart. Daniel is simply a mouthpiece for God, and he admits that to Nebuchadnezzar, that that's the only reason that he is standing there before him. And so you get to verse 31, and we're finally told what was this dream that had Nebuchadnezzar so concerned. And I think Nebuchadnezzar realized, while he didn't understand the dream, I think Nebuchadnezzar realized it had something to do with him. And it had something to do with his kingdom. And I think that's what worried him. He didn't understand it, but I think he understood by the imagery, this has got something to do with me and my kingdom, and there's something wrong here. And so here's the king's dream. He sees this dream of a statue, and Daniel is going to tell him the interpretation of it. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come back to this outline in just a minute. But from verse 31 through verse 35, he tells him the dream. And then from verse 36 down through verse 45, he tells him the interpretation. But we'll come back to that outline in just a minute. But I think just visually, hopefully this will help us. Verse 31. You, O king, were watching. I want you to imagine being Nebuchadnezzar and somebody just tells you what you dreamed. Would you be a little impressed? Would your jaw be on the floor when this guy is detailing what you had dreamed? It's possible that Nebuchadnezzar had forgotten parts of his... Have you ever forgotten parts of a dream? You remember part of it and it's like, that was weird, but you couldn't remember every detail. And you imagine some kid coming in and telling you every detail of your dream? Yeah, Yeah. That was, yes. That was a part of it. I want you to imagine being Nebuchadnezzar when Daniel says to him, "You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome." King saying, "Yes, I am. I am awesome. I am great. I'm not kidding." That's likely what was in his mind. What happens in the next chapter? What does he make for the people to bow down to? A great image. Yes, this is me. So he's thinking, wow, what a great image. And no doubt he thought it was him. This image's head was of fine gold, the image on the screen, its chest and arms of silver, its belly of thighs and bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. Verse 34 is key. "You watched while a stone was cut out without hands." How can a stone be cut out without hands? Without hands mean no man did it. Okay, if a stone's cut out and a man didn't do it, then who did it? There's only one answer. If man didn't do it, God did it. Here's divine intervention. Here is a divine activity. A stone is cut out by God. What did the stone do? It struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. So it strikes the image at his feet, breaks those in pieces, but that's not all. Verse 35, "Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold." He works all the way up back to the top of the image. And he says, "Those were crushed together and they became like chaff." Here's gold and silver and bronze and iron. This is great stuff. No, they became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. Boy, these are great things. And now they're nothing. Well, what's left? What's left is the stone. Everything that you saw in this great image is gone. What's left? The stone. The stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This stone is of divine origin. It wasn't made or cut out with hands. This stone was powerful enough to destroy this mighty statue. And this stone, we learn here, would grow into a worldwide mountain. What could this stone be? That's what Nebuchadnezzar is all concerned about. What could this mean? What could this be about? Verse 36, Daniel says, "All right, king, that's your dream." And I want you to, what's Nebuchadnezzar's face look like? Yeah, it is, every bit of it. Now, let me tell you its interpretation. That's the dream. What does it mean? Verse 37, what's the first word you have in verse 37? You. That's the word I've got in my Bible, you. Where does this dream start? This dream starts with you, king. You, O king, are the king of kings. Nebuchadnezzar was the king of what nation? Babylon. You, O king, are the king of kings. For the God of heaven has given you a kingdom. What do we see in verse 21? What does God do with the kings in verse 21? He removes kings and raises up kings. Nebuchadnezzar, where did you get your kingdom? Well, from my father, Nabopolassar. He died in 606 and I became king. No, that's not where you got the king. That's not where you got the kingdom. Jehovah, the God of heaven, has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven, He, the God of heaven, has given them into your hand. And He, the God of heaven, has made you ruler over them all. You, king, are this head of gold. Yes, sir, I am. What else would Nebuchadnezzar think other than, yes, I am the head of gold? God had put Nebuchadnezzar in this place. God, through Jeremiah, called Nebuchadnezzar his servant. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't realize it, but he's just an instrument in the hand of God. He is fulfilling the will of God throughout this entire thing. And the reason God's people are in Babylonian captivity is so that they can be punished and they can be corrected, not just punished, but corrected from their sin of idolatry and to prepare them for their future. But verse 39 is where the king would have gotten concerned. Yes, I am the head of gold, but after you, what's going to happen after you, O king? But after you shall arise another kingdom. It's inferior to yours, but in other words, king, you and your kingdom are not going to last forever. What's going to come later is the Medo-Persian Empire. We're going to read about the Medes. Chapter 5, the very end of chapter 5 is where the Babylonian Empire is taken over by the Medes. And then that's in 539 B.C. Is when that happens. And the Medes had been conquered by the Persians, and that's why it's the Medo-Persian combined. But Daniel sees them as one kingdom, Medo-Persian Empire. And so they're going to come after Babylon. And then another one after that, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. What kingdom was that? That's Greece. Who was the king who conquered the whole known world? Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great had conquered all the way over, even into India. He died in 323 B.C. when he was only like 32 years old. Can you imagine being 32 years old and in less than 10 years you've conquered the whole known world? You know the story where after he had done that, he sat down and cried because there was no more lands to conquer. And this is going to be fleshed out even more when we get into later chapters. When we get into the second half of the book, God is going to flesh this out even more, talking about Greece, especially a lot about Greece and Rome when we get over there. But he's just dropping this here. This third empire is going to rule over all the earth. Verse 40, and the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron. What kingdom was as strong as iron after the Greek? And as much as iron breaks in pieces, shatters everything, and like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all others. Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. What kingdom is this talking about? Talking about Rome, ruling with an iron fist, and yet the feet are made of iron and of clay, meaning the kingdom is divided. The strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. Verse 42, and as the stones of the feet and as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. So you read about the history of Rome, and as they continued their conquest and as they continued to bring in more people, it actually weakened the nation as a whole, and they did not unite together, is what verse 43 tells us. They would not mingle with these conquered people. And so while they are conquering more peoples, it's actually making them weaker in the process. So they have strengths, they have weaknesses, but that's not his point here. His point is to get to verse 44. And here in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 44 is a verse you ought to memorize. You ought to know where it is. This is one of the top five most important verses in all of the Old Testament. We need to know this verse. In the days of these kings, what kings? The Roman kings. He's putting a chronological time marker. In the days of the Roman kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom. Four things about this kingdom. It shall never be destroyed. What did Jesus say about his church? I'll build my church and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. Put Matthew 16, 18, 19 next to Daniel 2 and verse 44 and see the parallels between the two. God's kingdom, never be destroyed. God's kingdom shall not be left to other people. In other words, it is not some regal power that's going to be transferred from Babylon to Medo-Persia. It's not some regal power that goes from people to people. No. Not left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all of these kingdoms. The power of the message of God that would go out would invade every kingdom on earth, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And God's kingdom shall stand how long? Forever. When God put his kingdom on the earth in the days of the Roman kings, how long would it last? Would it still be here today in 2020? Still be here today. What did God put on the earth in the days of the Roman king? He put the kingdom. When John the Baptist came, when Jesus came, they said the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Jesus said, I will build my church. And so the kingdom that God is going to establish, that is going to be greater than and is going to be superior to all of these other kingdoms, is his church. Verse 45, and as much as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands and that it broke in pieces, the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. God showed you this great stone. the great stone that was cut out without hands. He's talking about, I have no doubt, talking about Christ, about His kingdom, and about His victorious plan that is going to come about 600 years later. This is, Daniel doesn't even realize it. He's looking down the telescope of time, 600 years, and Nebuchadnezzar doesn't realize it. God just showed Nebuchadnezzar 600 years of history. That's why he was concerned about it. 600 years of what's going to happen. And when you get down there, you got this kingdom, this kingdom, this kingdom, this kingdom, four man kingdoms, and then you get to God's kingdom that will be here forever. Daniel says this is the dream. Its interpretation is sure. And what does Nebuchadnezzar do? Nebuchadnezzar falls on his face before Daniel. He presents an offering before Daniel's king. Verse 47, he says, truly your God. He doesn't say my God. He doesn't say the God. He just says your God. He's not a believer yet. But he says, your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal the secret and nobody else could. Verse 48, the king promoted Daniel, did exactly what he said he would do. David gave him many great gifts, made him ruler. Think about this, made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon. And he made him the chief administrator over who? The guys who could not tell Nebuchadnezzar what he wanted to know. Guys, you've got a new boss. His name is Daniel. He put him as chief administrator over them. Verse 49, also Daniel petitioned the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over, you got the word over like three times in those two verses, over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel remained in the king's court. Here are four teenage boys that were just put into positions of authority in the Babylonian kingdom. How'd all that come about? One answer. God. God is working all the way through this book. I wish we had weeks, maybe months, to talk about Daniel chapter 2. It is a significant key chapter for us to know. Underline, highlight, memorize verse 44. It's talking about the Lord's church that comes about in the New Testament. Thank you all very much for your time and attention this morning.